Hey guys, did you know that you can subscribe to the Investor Coaching Show podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts? When you subscribe, you get notifications with new episodes so you never have to go looking for an episode or worry about what you've missed. So if you're on your phone or computer, go ahead and pause the episode real quick and become a subscriber. If you're not sure how to subscribe, go to paulwinkler.com/how-to-subscribe, all one word, how to subscribe, for instructions, or click the link in the show note. Now let's get started.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
And welcome to the Investor Coaching Show. I'm Paul Winkler, talking about money investing, retirement planning, educating, bringing you through the news of the day, because sometimes the news is a great educator. If you can learn from other people's mistakes, as I'm going to talk about in a second, that's a much better way than learning from your own mistakes. And that actually brings me to something that I was reading in the New York Times. Okay, so there was an article in the New York Times that I saw. It was "What They Saw in Aussie" was the title of the article. I thought this is really interesting stuff. Reading about this guy that was at the forefront of this company, and I'll just go from the article. It says there's an irresistible temptation in this age of scams and hype to obsess about the man or woman at the center of a company's implosion. Theranos' Elizabeth Holmes was the subject of an HBO documentary and is now the center of a high-profile trial. And when Aussie media collapsed on Friday, less than a week after the New York Times reported on a series of misleading statements and actions, all eyes turned to the man at the center of the company, which is Carlos Watson, an ambitious dreamer who seemed to believe what he was selling. When he spoke with me over Zoom from a California backyard on Sunday, he conceded nothing. "I put everything into this company," he said. "We tried to do what we could to hopefully live out a set of values about inclusivity and growth and innovation and change and possibility. Those were real things." So, you know, all lofty goals, right? So I had to look up who this company was because I didn't know a whole lot about them. I went on Wikipedia. It says that they're an American media and entertainment company, an area that I track a whole lot, launched in September 2013 by Carlos Watson and Samir Rao. It is headquartered in Mountain View, California, with an additional office in New York City. Aussie produces podcasts, television series, and events, and they received an Emmy for a 2019 television show that aired on the Oprah Winfrey Network. So they went on in the article and they said part of the genius of Mr. Watson is, and this whole thing is what they reflect back to the people who put up the money. The most interesting part of their stories always is the mirror that they hold up to the ones who believed. And, you know, it is interesting. You tell somebody, hey, you want to learn something about somebody? Look at their checkbook. Well, that used to be what they'd say when people had checkbooks. Look at their checkbook. Look at their credit card statement. And you can see what somebody believes and what they believe in. Want to know how a bunch of seemingly sophisticated people fell for a company that every social media intern in America had questions about? So who was investing in this is what they're saying here. Who was actually investing in this thing? Who was backing this project? Well, they had a billionaire philanthropist was one. A hedge fund manager was another. Chief executive of a German publishing giant. I mean, this is a bunch of really sophisticated people, right? And they said, you know, who wouldn't want to join that club? I mean, who wouldn't want to be rubbing shoulders with these kind of people and investing in the same things that they are? Thinking, wow, you know, these people are really sophisticated. As long as I follow what they're doing, I ought to be in good shape, right? And it says the whole Aussie episode seemed to confirm a widely held suspicion that venture capital and advertising may be the world's least rigorous industries. And, you know, that is something I have said many, many times. You know, it's a shame that people, as I started with, have to learn from their own experience. But I've commented many times on this, on venture capital and private equity and how wealthy people invest, and they're not great role models. You know, when we talk about investing, you know, what is it we're talking about here? We're talking about people wanting to support something that they believe in. And what is the biggest thing that people are all excited about right now that I've talked about many times on this show? ESG investing, environmental, social, governance. You know, I want to invest in companies that are, if somebody really believes strongly in any of these things, I want to invest only in companies that do what I believe in, which is really, think about it, that's just, yeah, that sounds great. But when you invest in stock markets, remember, when you're investing in public markets, you're not putting your money directly in that company. That company's not getting your money, unless it's an IPO, which they don't happen that often, but initial public offering, which is where, you know, companies going and saying, we need to raise money because we're going to do some great things in the future. And they're going to put out all this stuff about how they're going to use your money to try to get you to pay the highest price you can for it. As a matter of fact, studies last night I saw on IPOs, they tend to lose money in the first 9 months because people overpay for them. They buy into the hype, they get excited, they buy the stock, and then all of a sudden it comes down to earth again when things don't necessarily pan out the way the company said that they would. But, you know, that's where you're giving the money directly to the company. Now, any other time, what happens, you have an IPO and then it becomes a public company, gets in your mutual fund at work or wherever. And what you're doing is you're buying that stock from somebody else that owned it before you. It's going to them. It's not going to the company directly. So that's the one issue that I have with a lot of this type of investing. You're not really helping out the company. It's not really doing anything for them. But a lot of people do invest in these types of things. And venture capital is one where you can go straight into the company and private equity. So that's another way that people are doing exactly what I'm talking about right here. But here's the problem. As they said, they can be the least rigorous things out there. Why? Because they're not regulated very well. You go to the Securities and Exchange Commission, you look at, you know, the investment industry, FINRA, and the regulators, you know, you have companies being watched over like hawks when they have public stock. You know, they have to actually publish all their information, their balance sheets, and all their financial information. And if it weren't for, let's say, you know, you may say, well, you know, the government's not great at regulating, blah, 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 blah. Well, in reality, it's not just them. It's other people watching what's going on as well. You know, you have analysts, the investment industry, they don't want to look like fools. They don't want to back something that implodes. You know, every once in a while, you're going to get something that slips through, like a global crossing or something like that. But, you know, in essence, there is a pretty good regulatory watch over the industry with public markets, but there's not. And that's why people do private equity. That's why they do venture capital. The reason is because they don't have to publish their information. And since they don't have to publish their information, you may not know what on earth's going on in a company. That's just the reality of things. Now, what a lot of people do, wealthy people might do, is they might get into these types of things because they can actually do that. They might be what's called an accredited investor and be able to bypass the channels and invest in some of these things. And that's what we see here, is wealthy people falling for this quote unquote. Now, what does it say about them? I remember when the whole Bernie Madoff thing came about. You know, that whole thing was who got taken in by that? It was wealthy investors. And I remember doing a video about this, and I said, hey, you know, what's going on here? And I think really what's going on is that so often wealthy people think they deserve better returns than other mere mortals. Some wealthy people, that's kind of the thing. Hey, you know, I'm special. I'm wealthy. I got money. I got a better car than you. I got a better house than you. I got better everything than you. I ought to get better returns than you as well. So what happens? They invest in these types of private ventures thinking, hey, I'm really sophisticated. And it's an ego thing. And what ends up happening is they end up getting burnt by it because of all the reasons that I just talked about. You know, so what does it say about the people who do invest? Possibly that they want to be somebody. They want to appear to be somebody. You know, it's a longing for importance that people just have and significance. You know, I want to be somebody. I want to be important. And how I invest may be a part of how I gain that importance. I want to be good. You know, maybe it's that. I just want to look good. And that's why I invest in things that I do, so that you'll think well of me. That's a really strong desire for people to think well of you. And, you know, I just think it may be a healthier way of looking at it. You know, what it just hit me is, remember Groucho Marx? He had this letter of resignation. It's a famous one of the Friars Club. And a line that people still talk about to this day. He says, "I don't want to belong to any club that it would accept me as one of its members." I always thought that was one of the funniest lines out there. Yeah, think about it. That's a healthy self-assessment and you know, not putting yourself on a pedestal. You know, hey, look, if you want me in your club, and I'm kind of a lowly person, there's not anything that special about me. What does that say about your club? Now, I think that a lot of times people, even wealthy people, they're too dependent on blind trust. You know, just blindly trusting it. You know, if somebody else has done this, I figured that they must have done the due diligence. They must have researched this. You know, I like what Reagan said, you know, trust but verify. Yeah, but there's no verification in these types of things. And, you know, what happened is people got yanked in. They got pulled in. And it didn't turn out so well because there was no real verification, because that's exactly what these companies were companies that were trying to skirt being watched over too closely. So their information wasn't public. Now, so what happened is that Aussie debuted in 2013. It offered a brand of sincere coverage meant to appeal to a bipartisan audience. Therein, says the Times, lay its genius. This hopeful futurism, diversity without the conflict, strongly appealed to the elites who poured in the cash. And again, it's that desire for something that I really want this ideal. And it's interesting that younger people, you know, especially, this is what we often find. And that's what they said here, is that the Aussie website was heavy in earnest stories about young people who wanted to change the world and celebrities being their best selves. And I remember seeing something about their depression and anxiety and that younger people, when they reached their late 20s, it was something that they reached their late 20s, and what they found was that they couldn't change the world, that they didn't, all the ideals that they wanted to support, that the world was flawed and it wasn't going to change. And often they actually become depressed and despondent and just, oh man, I can't do all of those things. Those ideals that I had in my mind aren't something that I can accomplish. The world's not going to change. And it does. It's kind of sad when you think about it, but a lot of people go through exactly that at that age. And it's just a healthy dose of realism that has hit them is really what it gets down to. And that's exactly what's going on here. These people wanted to support something that was bigger than them, which is, again, it's laudable. But you know, I look at it and go, invest wisely. Make sure that you're doing the right things. Be prudent with your investing. Don't mess up. And then what you can do with your money that you make doing that, investing properly, then go and do the laudable things. You know, don't invest in other people doing laudable things. You go do laudable things, kind of way I look at it. And I love this line right here. And I had to read it a couple times. So I'm going to read this and I'm going to walk through what I got out of this one line, because I thought it was brilliant. It said, "My perception is that some advertisers and venture capitalists are much more comfortable attaching themselves to media with lower stakes that is attached to lofty ideas, but not news that is going to move the needle or challenge the status quo," said Lauren Williams, former editor-in-chief of Vox, who left the site to start a news site focused on Black audiences. I think that's what they saw in Aussie. And I had to read that. Like I said, I had to look at that a couple times because I thought, whoa, wait a minute, there's something profound here. And it's brilliant. People don't really want to take a stand. This is what I read in this. It's too risky. If you're wrong, you're going to look like an idiot. You could look really, really bad. And people want to basically look good. And the problem is that utopia doesn't exist in the world. And you're stepping out there and doing this type of thing. And if you're on the wrong side of an idea and it shows up, what happens to you if you've taken too big of a stand? Remember, I did this thing a couple weeks ago when I was talking about zebra. You know, what is their camouflage? The black and white. Why? Because they all look so alike that a lion can't pick out any single one zebra. You know, because it's just a mishmash of black and white stripes. And that's the brilliance of their camouflage, is they look like everybody. And that's what people want to do. They just want to look alike so often. And it's a lot safer that way. You know, so I look at this and go, you know, we can't make this utopia, but the closest thing, and I've talked about this before as well, is capitalism. And so many people are demonizing capitalism now. Oh, it's bad. It's terrible. There are bad people in it. And yeah, there definitely are. I mean, this is an example of something that went really, really wrong. But why was it wrong? It was because of the type of company. Remember, this is not the type of stuff we want to invest in. It's one of the hottest things out there. And people, investment brokers, and you're seeing these companies, big investment firms are jumping on this private equity type of thing. And I just shake my head and go, you're playing with fire. You are playing with fire. But you know, the beauty of the public stock markets is you're investing in capitalism. And the beauty about capitalism is if I want to get what I want, I have to give you what you want. I'm forced literally into doing what's right, focusing on your needs and focusing on your desires to get what I want. Now, it would be great to think that everybody's good and that everybody can be trusted, but it's just not realistic. And that is why this show exists. That's why the podcast exists, to help educate you so you don't fall prey to this stuff. You know, that is the whole idea, because blind trust is way too expensive. So, you know, in essence here, the lesson: you got a company, not publicly traded, no real disclosure, people easily fooled, actually trying to follow wealthy people and look at what they do, typically not the greatest strategy in the world. Wealthy people are not great investors. We see it time and time again. We see that who gets taken advantage of quite often is that group of people. They do brilliant things, making money, building businesses, building enterprises. But the reality of it is, when it comes down to investing what they've earned and preserving it, not so great. And here is just another example of that. Don't look at wealthy people and look at how they invest. You know, so many investment firms do that. They try to play to that. You know, to invest with our firm, you have to have, you know, $500,000, you have to have $250,000, and you have to have $1 million. And the reality is, what they're doing is they're trying to make you think that they are something special, that you have to be special. You have to be big enough to invest in our firm and with us. When the reality is just another sales gimmick. Really gets down to it. And if you look at wealthy people, they're not necessarily great investors. A lot of times they will fall for that stuff. You know, they must be really good if that's their minimum to get in. They're only investing very, very wealthy people's money. Nah, don't fall for it. All right. Let's change gears now. I was actually at a friend of mine, and a couple. They actually live out in Arizona. And we got to talking about, you know, just retirement planning and real estate and what to do with an existing house. You know, do you sell it? Or do you buy another one? Do you stay in the existing house? Do you do a reverse mortgage? We got a just really interesting strategic conversation, you know, from a tax standpoint. You know, how can we maybe put off Social Security and live off of proceeds from a sale of a home? And they were talking about the housing prices, the challenge in Phoenix that they were having. And lo and behold, like a day later, I see an article in Bloomberg, and it's saying exactly that. But it's not only talking about Phoenix, it was talking about all around the country, but it was specifically talking a lot about Phoenix. And it was saying what's driving the huge U.S. rent spike was the title of the article, and just talking about what's going on here. And I said, Valley King Properties Phoenix Area Apartment Rental Brokerage proudly proclaims on its website that it can help anybody find an apartment. no matter what your situation is. But that promise is proving hard to live up to these days, says Eric Atencio, Valley Kings regional manager. Red hot rental market has made it impossible to place many would-be tenants with units moving off of the shelf at a record pace. I said, so what's going on here? And it was interesting. It was just interesting, the explanation of what was going on, because it's, like I said, it's happening everywhere. But it was just interesting to see what their take on it was. So the current spike in rents is most pronounced in places like Phoenix metro area and Boise, where rents for two-bedroom apartments have climbed 15 to 21% respectively in the last year, per Zumper data. But those markets aren't unique. It's a nationwide phenomenon that's having a significant impact on housing markets, affordability, and access. And they said, what happened is this? They said that home prices or home sales popped at the beginning of the pandemic because everybody went into the market all at once. You know, so apparently what happened, a lot of people looking, and that drove the price of homes up. The rental market is more of a slow matriculation. It takes a while for that backlog of renters to build up who should have cycled out of the market. And what they're saying is that they had this combination of the housing market kind of being crazy, and then the cyclical nature of housing returning, and a lot of people just didn't want to move during the pandemic. They're just like, well, let's not go anywhere. Let's not do anything. We don't know where this is going to go. We don't know if our job is safe. We don't know what's going to happen financially. You know, you got markets turning down, stock markets going down significantly. And, you know, when that happened, nobody knew what on earth was happening. And markets went down, of course, for a couple of reasons, obviously, because they're concerned that you were going to have lower profits in the future, but also you have that in combination with risk. Anytime there's more risk, people want to compensate themselves. How do they compensate themselves? They pay less for something. If they're concerned that there's more risk, they'll pay less in order to build in for themselves a greater expected return in the future, which, by the way, is why it's so crazy when we sell into market downturns. Because basically we're selling at a very time when the expected return is higher, you know, so that's one of the problems with that. So anyway, what happened is these people didn't want to move during the pandemic, but now they're vaccinated, they're comfortable, and they're, you know, looking at life as being somewhat normal and getting back to normal. So they're wanting to move again. And that has increased the number of people looking for apartments. But obviously you also have that with a combination of the builders not building as many for a while, and even a short slowdown in building has created this situation where there just aren't enough properties, and it's driving up the prices. And, you know, I was thinking about this because, you know, I have seen this happen so many times doing this for over 30 years. You see things. And so often what I see is people watch a market like the real estate market. And it can be stock markets too. It can be, you know, small cap stocks, or it can be value stocks, or it can be large company stocks, or whatever. And people sit back and they go, oh, wait a minute, there's action going on over there. You know, look at this. The rents are going up by this amount. The prices are going up by that amount. And of course, the knee-jerk reaction is, I want in on it. I don't, you know, fear of missing out. I don't want to miss out on this. And then they start building more properties. And all of a sudden, you have this huge number of properties that come out. And this group of renters, which is, you know, it's a temporary phenomenon, is basically what they're saying in this article, that there is just, they're playing catch up. And it's kind of like we were talking about how people last week, we were talking about how people are spending, and they're making up for lost time. And I didn't get to spend for quite a while. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to make up for lost time, and I'm going to spend like crazy. Just to catch up with whatever I missed when, you know, the pandemic was going on and when it was at its strongest. So, and that's basically what's going on here. You have a bunch of people, and eventually that demand is going to dry up. And I think that there's, you know, at some point you're going to see this whole thing reverse, and you don't know when it's going to happen, but you just kind of see the writing on the wall. I've seen it so many times that it just makes me very leery. And watching people do what they do as far as saying, hey, I'm going to get involved in this. I want to jump on board and I don't want to miss out. And you see that with, you know, not only that, but you see that with their cryptocurrencies. You know, their people are jumping all over that and getting excited about that because they hear stories of people getting rich. And once you hear a story about somebody getting rich, you go, whoa, wait a minute. I want that too. I want that for me. And that is typically when you chase after something like that. That is typically when you're pretty much destined to get burned. In my experience, that's what I see all the time. I see people chasing after things and never quite catching it. And then they get burned enough times, and then hopefully they learn. But, you know, it's better to learn from other people's mistakes, as I've said several times today, it seems. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. You want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one.